Welcome to this Frequency Matters podcast. I'm Pat Hindle. I'm here with my co-host Gary LaRude and special guest Peter Jarek, head of GSMA Intelligence. Welcome, Peter.
Glad to be here. Thank you very much, Pat.
In this episode, we're going to talk about the 5G millimeter wave market as GSMA Intelligence has just completed an extensive report on use cases and the economics of millimeter wave networks. Let's start off with how did the rollouts of 5G networks make out in 2020, Peter?
So, what we saw in the last quarter of 2020 was that we saw in the last quarter, there were 25 operators in 17 markets that launched. What that means is that by the end of the year, there were 135 operators in 52 markets that had launched 5G services. That's a pretty impressive number. It signals that we're getting to a place where, 5G may not be available in every country, but it's clearly going mainstream. At the end of the year, we'd seen about 230 million connections and, really setting on a course to see that, more than double by the end of this year.
So if we look at the common 5G use cases, can these be supported more cost effectively without millimeter wave? Or maybe the other way to ask the question is, how does millimeter wave enhance the use cases for 5G?
That's a great question because that really gets to the heart of the work that we did, right? And the work that we were doing was to look and say, cost effectively, the question is total cost of ownership, right? When you think about what someone needs to be doing with their network. And so what we did is we specifically looked at what that total cost of ownership would be in a millimeter wave versus 3.5 gigahertz. And actually, not one versus the other, but recognizing that they're going to go together. So recognizing, looking at 3.5 gigahertz without millimeter wave or a combination of the two. What we found is that use case dependent, right? So it depends on what you're doing. But if you look at the key use cases, like dense urban connectivity, like fixed wireless access, like enterprise communications, that yes, you can get, what looks to be about, a 35 to, maybe 27% savings across these use cases when you combine the two, right? And that comes down to, this really comes down to, of course, any of these decisions, any of these sort of proclamations are down to the assumptions you make. And really the key assumption here is about, data demand, the data traffic, and how, given the amount of spectrum that's available in millimeter wave bands, the fact that you can really, more cost effectively deliver to those demands.
So you looked at a lot of different use cases, different frequencies, and different networks. What kind of models did you use to come to these conclusions?
We had to essentially create our own model here because, when you go there, as you called out, there's so many different things that, there's so many different variables. So what we did is we created a model that looked at a number of variables, including, as I mentioned, the traffic demand, propagation, assumptions around the market share that an operator would gain, inter-site distances, basically combining all of those things to model out what would happen if you would look at one technology versus the other, right? So for example, if you're just using 3.5 versus a combination of millimeter wave and 3.5, sure, you can still meet those traffic demands. You just have to densify your network, in a much different way with your 3.5 spectrum because you don't have that extra millimeter wave, right? And so it was those sorts of considerations that went into this model. And it was really about those assumptions that drove.
As part of your analysis, did you look at regional differences where millimeter wave technology is more beneficial? And how within a region does it compare, say, in rural areas versus dense cities?
It's a great question. We did. So we looked at these use cases, and we didn't just look at them, sort of at a basic level. But, we looked at them in, different regions. We looked at them in Europe, the U.S., and China. And we created representative cities. We didn't pick a specific city to say, this is what it would look like in, in Shanghai or Chicago. But we created representative cities to see what it would look like. And you know, you hit it that, you know, the key there is obviously density, right? Now that's going to differ. It's going to differ depending upon the use case. You know, for a fixed wireless use case, obviously density is less of an issue than you know, dense urban deployments, as we talked about. But it is that density, particularly because the density, you know, there's two issues there, right? You know, the more dense it is, the easier it is to leverage millimeter wave given the propagation, you know, challenges it faces. But also where you have that density, you're going to have the higher demand for data, right? Because you've got, you know, more people in it. You know, we're all trying to do, you know, trying to do what we all want to do with our phones, right? And so, yes, it really comes down to that rural versus you know, dense urban side of things in terms of when you think about that. However, when we think about things like enterprise, obviously that comes down more to, you know, the number of enterprises in an area, what kinds of use cases that they're using. So really, you know, it depends obviously on all those factors.
What are the main challenges that have impeded millimeter wave developments to date for 5G networks?
Yeah, so probably the, you know, and I think, you know, I talked a bit about this, and you know, it's the one that we're all familiar with. You know, it's propagation, right? You know, we know that millimeter wave, you know, millimeter wave signals don't travel very far, right? And that's been the, you know, that's been the big ding on it for, you know, for years. And but if you want to think about it more generally, right, you know, the real challenge has been, it's still been a, I don't want to say nascent technology, but the mobile industry in particular knows how to deal with, you know, lower band frequencies, right? Just learning in many ways about how millimeter wave works. You know, it was probably just a few years ago when we started talking about use in mobile, and we saw, you know, some of these trials and demos going, well, can you actually do mobility with millimeter wave? You know, that's crazy, right? And you know, I think you always see this with new technologies, but you know, I remember, you know, years ago when, you know, I was doing some work in the millimeter wave space, and what you would hear from a lot of people is, well, physics is physics and you can't get around it. So you can't tell me that you could actually, you know, get to a certain distance. You can't tell me that, you know, some of this stuff is just, you know, it's just impossible, right? You know, well, now you've got, you know, you've got vendors who are demonstrating, you know, connections that are going, you know, at around 4 kilometers. You've got, you know, vendors who are showing off sort of fully non-line of sight in the way that we might expect with lower bands, but, you know, degrees of non-line of sight. So I think we're, you know, we're learning about the capabilities as this gets into the field. And, you know, the good thing is that means that the more and more we learn, the more and more you can see the sort of optimized. And so, you know, it's not fair to call it an immature technology because it's far from immature. But I think the, you know, what you're seeing is the learnings really helping it to, you know, to get out there in a way that it wasn't before.
At the start, you mentioned total cost of ownership. And if we go back to the cost equation, can you speak more about the cost of millimeter wave versus sub 6 gigahertz networks, how they compare? Do you consider network capacity and, say, geographic density as part of your economic model?
We did. Yeah, definitely. You know, the density side of things, capacity, those are all, you know, those are all key assumptions. I mean, so just going back to some of the numbers, right? You know, if we look at, let's say, that dense urban, if you benchmark against 3.5 gigahertz only, right? The 3.5 gigahertz plus millimeter wave comes in at about a 35% saving. Now the assumption, right, is very high population density and about 25% of the users being connected there, right? And of course, you still have the 3.5 gigahertz band for coverage, but I think that's, you know, that goes to exactly your point, right? You know, it assumes, you know, we assume that you're looking at a real dense area with a lot of connected users. And I think it's important here, just to go back to that idea of, you know, one versus the other, right? We don't want to pitch this as it's, you know, millimeter wave versus mid band or versus 3.5. it's you know, leveraging them together. And I think that that's important, because I've seen, you know, recently there were some claims from, you know, one of the major operators in terms of how many millimeter wave base stations they were going to launch over the next year. And there were some comments, I think, from, oh, that's, you know, that number of base stations wouldn't cover, I think it was Delaware, right? I think they made something, hey, you know, all of those together wouldn't. It's a neat little soundbite, right? That sort of idea of, you know, oh, heck, you know, that's nothing, right? But the reality is, you know, and I was talking to my colleague, he said, no one's ever going to cover any full area with millimeter wave. Like, you know, you think of a dense area like Singapore, no. Hong Kong, no. Vatican City, maybe, right? You know, that might be one place where you would provide blanket coverage. But that's not how, at least for the foreseeable future, this will work. You're going to have, you know, the mid band or lower band for coverage, and then the value then of millimeter wave is for covering, you know, really providing that capacity.
So it seems like in the beginning of 5G, the US was very aggressive with millimeter wave technology, and China kind of concentrated on sub 6 gigahertz. Right now, what countries are leading the charge for millimeter wave deployments?
You're right. I think it's still US. The US had, and you saw that with the spectrum allocations, and you saw that with how they, you know, went out really hard on that. Beyond the US, though, you know, there's strong regulatory support from operators really, you know, around the world, right? So besides the US, Australia, Germany, Hong Kong, you know, there's interest in Japan, South Korea. So I think it's, you know, countries around the world. China is obviously looking at it, right? And, you know, I think every country is obviously looking at it. So it's growing.
So I think everybody has been focused on the handset, the smartphone, if you will, for millimeter wave and 5G. And of course, the big announcement in the fall was the iPhone 12 that included millimeter wave. Can you speak, though, more broadly to the consumer products, maybe outside of that space, that support millimeter wave? What are we starting to see?
You know, when we think about the consumer products, I think for us, you know, the most important ones probably were, you know, the smartphones and the CPEs, the fixed wireless CPEs, in part because, you know, as we go out and we look at what the use cases are for operators, right, it is how do they offload some of that, you know, some of that traffic, right? When we began this project, sort of our assumptions were that, you know, in 2020, you'd probably see 10 plus smartphones and 35 or so, you know, fixed wireless CPE. Now, you know, if I go and I look at some of the latest numbers, and we don't, you know, these numbers change every day. You know, it looks like there's probably around 23 commercially available smartphones currently that have millimeter wave support. Now, that's interesting. It's a big number, but I don't think it really matters as much as the fact that, you know, some of those devices are sort of the ones that people really want. Right. So, it's one thing to have a large number. It's another thing to have a millimeter wave supporting iPhone. You know, it's another thing to have, you know, the latest flagship from Samsung, you know, supporting millimeter wave spectrum. So I think that's, you know, from a consumer device perspective, that's one part. But two, and I think this is something we've been focused on a lot around 5G in general, it is also just that diversity, right? Because if it was just the iPhone, that's a problem, right? You know, when you see, however, sort of lower end devices, you know, when you see devices that, you know, aren't $1,000, you know, when you see a OnePlus, or you see something from, you know, TCL, or you see one of the Nokia phones that have it, you know, that's important because it, you know, that's going to be key for getting us into the hands of people. Right. And that's been the story with 5G, you know, for the last few years, right? Moving it down to lower tiers, getting it, you know, away from sort of the flagship devices into, you know, lower end. I think you're seeing the same thing with millimeter wave.
I think millimeter wave has certainly garnered, as you indicated, the most attention over the last year, and certainly with some concern about propagation as 5G has been developed. millimeter wave has certainly been an esoteric frequency range, unproven compared to the sub 6 gigahertz cellular and Wi-Fi bands, which we generally take for granted. So, Peter, we really appreciate you joining us to share GSMA's insights, particularly on the interesting question of the economics of millimeter wave networks. It's been a very informative conversation. Thank you.
No, this has been some really fun work for us. You know, it's an important topic, and so we really enjoy sharing the insights. Thanks for having us.
That's great. And before leaving, we want to thank you, our listener, for joining us. Pat and I cover a wide range of RF microwave and millimeter wave technology and application topics, so we hope you'll join us on future episodes. And if you haven't subscribed to the Frequency Matters podcast, please do so on your favorite podcast platform. Until next time.